Hi, ladies. It's Tanya Mark, and today we're going to talk a little bit about perimenopausal insanity. Don't you love that title? Well, anyway, I just want to give you a little bit about me before we begin, and then I'm going to introduce Dr. Beth Claxton. So I'm an expert in mind-body nutrition, eating psychology, and fitness. And my passion is coaching my signature program, which is the Empowered Women's Wellness Club. And basically, that's a 10-week deep dive exploration into your personal wellness. And the emphasis is really on up-leveling your eating. So not just what, but how you eat, as well as your exercise and stress management strategies. And so the reason Beth and I wanted to talk about this subject today is because I'm just a few weeks away from turning 46. Yeah, and I've struggled and will struggle with perimenopausal symptoms unless I really tune in and make a daily practice of eating cleaner most of the time. Did you hear that? Most of the time, not all the time. Having a really efficient and effective exercise routine that's right for me. And most of all, I learned that I needed to truly manage my stress. And if I don't, I suffer from horrible night sweats, which ruin my sleep. And basically, that leaves me totally exhausted the next day. So it's just this horrible, horrible, vicious cycle. I've also will find that I'll get more anxiety, I'll feel overwhelmed, grumpy, bitchy, you know, and the list goes on. So I'm just going to turn it over to Dr. Beth Claxton. Thanks for being here today. And why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Thanks, Tanya. I am a board certified OBGYN physician. I say board certified because I just did my board recertification exam last week and really had to brush up on the latest and what's out there as recommended by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. I'm also studying with Kate Stillman in her yoga health coaching class to learn the 10 habits that are based in Ayurveda that really help anyone find balance in their lives. And in addition to these two things, I'm studying a program called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, which was developed by Jon Kabat-Zinn at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, and it teaches anyone how to meditate.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. So tell me a little bit about your interest in this subject.
Well, I'm personally interested, like you, Tanya. I'm 48 and a half. I rejoice every period I get that I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
And I'd have to say that those, we call it the luteal phase, the last 2 weeks before the period starts, luteal phase symptoms are really getting really prominent now, because what happens in the second half of the cycle is the estrogen levels fall and the progesterone levels rise. And then when the progesterone levels fall, that's when we get a period. But what makes it so difficult in the perimenopause is as the ovaries are getting older, the estrogen levels in our bodies naturally fall. And then when we start experiencing the cycle of our menses, the first 2 weeks we have estrogen amounts that can sustain us. The last 2 weeks, those estrogen levels may fall to a level that we are not used to in our bodies, and our blood vessels are not used to, and our brain and everything about us, our psyche. And it's quite an adjustment to learn to exist on these lower estrogen levels.
Yeah, I'll say.
Right. So people may notice that they have like spotting around the time where they're ovulating, and that's because estrogen levels drop around the time of ovulation. They also are the lowest right before we start our period, so there may be spotting before the period actually starts. During these 2 weeks, we may notice more hot flushes, or we call it vasomotor instability, around in those last 2 weeks, but you know, we're still getting our periods, so what's going on? Why am I getting these hot flushes? Because I'm not in menopause yet. It's just that the estrogen levels in our bodies are lower.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I have a list here that I thought would be fun to read because it's crazy long, of the 35 symptoms around perimenopause.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God. Like, it's insane. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, just being in this period of our life can be, gosh, super challenging. So I'm not going to read them all because we'll be here forever. But as you had mentioned, you know, hot flashes and night sweats, irritability, mood swings, the irregular periods, trouble sleeping through the night. Ugh. That one.
Yeah.
I hear that one a lot with my ladies. Do you get that complaint?
Oh, yeah, I'm not sleeping.
Yeah,
yep.
With or without the night sweats. You know, my personal challenge is mostly with night sweats, but I definitely feel like when I'm not practicing good self-care, my sleep just doesn't feel as sound. So here's some more. Loss of libido. Yep.
Yeah.
Crashing fatigue, anxiety, feelings of dread, apprehension, difficulty concentrating. Mental confusion, memory, you know, the brain fog. Achy, sore muscles and joints, breast tenderness, headaches, gastrointestinal distress, bloating. What else do we have here? A couple more. Weight gain, changes in body odor. That's an interesting one.
Very hormonally related.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've experienced that one myself, too. Hair thinning. So the list is quite long. And hearing you speak about, you know, that decline in estrogen, you know, estrogen's really nourishing and building.
Right, right.
And it's funny because I guess I didn't really notice that I was dealing with these hormonal symptoms until maybe, I don't know, a few years ago. But honestly, I feel like I might have been experiencing these almost around 35, where I was starting to notice some shifts.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of women report that they start feeling these things around the age of 35.
Yeah,
from an evolutionary standpoint, we aren't even supposed to be living. Are we supposed to die in our 40s? So the fact that we're living into our 80s and 90s, that's like something that from an evolutionary standpoint, we aren't even really supposed to be living that long. So, yeah, how can we create this? It's like we're almost given another life. And we have to deal with this.
Yeah, and it's super interesting that you're talking about kind of that stage of life and where we're supposed to be once we hit 35, as we get older, because Dr. Claudia Welch, who is somebody that is just an incredible, she comes from an Eastern background, but she has a wonderful book called Balance Your Hormones Balance Your Life, and she talks about how we have two buckets. We have when we're born, we have a stress bucket that's nice and full of all the cortisol we need to kind of handle the stresses of life. And then she talks about our sex hormone bucket, and she's really, when she talks about the sex hormone bucket, she is referring to progesterone and estrogen. And she talks about, like, just what you just said about how when we hit 35, there's that natural decline. But here's the cool part. Here's the cool part is that she said, okay, that's normal and natural, but we need to be balancing that natural decrease in sex hormones with the same level of stress in our lives. And so they should be balanced. So that means the stress in our lives should be more manageable. And as you said, usually women are done, they were completely done having babies by then.
Right. They had
and
them
moving
in their
into,
teens.
What's that?
They had them in their teens, maybe early 20s.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? And so being a woman in 2015, our stress buckets are not reducing. They're actually super high, and our need for stress for the common typical woman has been overflowing. We're kind of emptying and emptying and emptying that bucket and struggling to keep it full. And, you know, one of the things that Dr. Claudia talks about is how cortisol can be made from progesterone. It's not
yeah.
the only way, but
the,
it's one,
the,
right?
All the hormones can convert around, yeah.
So I thought that was really cool because as women, we tend to be kind of, most of us, kind of on the go, burning through our energy. And really, once we hit 35 and older, we should be working on learning how to manage our stress levels. And that could look, you know, when I define the word stress, stress is a real or perceived threat to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be just thoughts.
Right. And not only thoughts, but how we're perceiving our thoughts and how we're perceiving the environment based on our past experiences.
Yeah, that's pretty huge, I think, you know, because we think of stress as, I don't know, having to run around and pick up the kids and make meals or whatever, so much more to it.
Right.
And from what I do, you know, with my women, when I talk about the word stress, I say, well, high-quality food can reduce the stress on your body. An exercise routine that's right for reduce the stress on your body. You know what I mean? So there's lifestyle behaviors that we really could look at. I mean, how does allopathic medicine really deal with this, these challenges?
You know, the allopathic world just will probably give you serotonin reuptake inhibitors and maybe tell you to get more sleep. But they really aren't addressing the fact that people overuse caffeine. They use alcohol to calm themselves down. The whole mindfulness-based stress reduction program is a medical model, but there's not a lot of support out there from larger, you know, there's some from some institutions on the West Coast and maybe up in the Northeast, but for the most part, they don't even realize how much meditation can help. So, you know, I'm seeing these poor women that they just have some, you know, maybe some hormones someone gave them or some antidepressants that they were put on, and it's just, it's not what they need, and it's just not enough.
Yeah. You know, here's a great quote, and it happens to be by Dr. Claudia Welch. She says, quote, there's no herb, supplement, or drug that can entirely take the place of having an appropriate diet, lifestyle, and stress management routine.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, and you talk about meditation. One of the things that I've personally found has made an enormous change in the hormonal challenges that I was experiencing, specifically the night sweats, was that I started practicing pranayama, an alternate nostril breathing specifically. And I started making that part of my morning routine. And I started with 5 minutes, you know, trying to take things small. you know, not trying to do too much too soon. And then I really was like, I really want to commit to this calming my nervous system at the beginning of my day to start my day right, instead of rushing out the door and, you know, rushing through my morning kind of already in that stress response. And so at this point, I'm up to 20 minutes, and it took a lot of practice, but about three, I know this sounds like a long time, but about 3 months later, I'm like, wow, I cannot believe how much my symptoms have reduced.
So you're just, you weren't getting the hot flushes at night as much?
No, not at all. That made a big shift, and so that could look different, you know, for each person. Maybe it's meditation or gratitude journaling or, you know, really, I don't know, I really like how important it is for us to focus on the daily routine from when we wake up in the morning, how we start our day, what we do in between, you know, how we're feeding ourselves, how we're nourishing ourselves physically, mentally, and then how we're winding our day down and how important that is, too, to kind of promote good sleep, you know?
Right. And, you know, I was thinking about just everything that we're talking about with the stress. And if we feel in our bodies what stress feels like, it's a contracted state. It's not open to what's happening. It's us shutting everything down and stuck in our own worlds. And if there's a way that we can open to gratitude, do some breathing and open to what's really happening and feel that softening in our body and in our heart, that's more of an expanding state. And then we can even, you know, maybe even sit back and imagine an expanded state coming out of the heart, opening to what's happening and what really is. And notice the difference between those two states and how it feels in the body. And you could, in an expanded state, open, you could really take what's happening and you wouldn't have to push it away because you just can't deal with it. And maybe the body can welcome the hormonal shifts a lot better than and not need to have hot flashes and night sweats.
And do you practice meditation?
I do. I do every morning. Right now I am trying to find a balance between that right exercise routine for me and meditation in the hour that I have from when I get up to when I need to leave. And so the meditation some days is 10 minutes, some days it's 40, and, you know, it's, I'm playing with it, trying to find what's best. But also at the end of the day, taking 3 to 5 minutes just sitting in bed, on the edge of the bed, maybe on my cushion, but usually I just sit in bed and try to, well, I do. I let the energy drop, let the worries of the day just fall away and expand into having a good, restful sleep that night. And when I do that, it's, my rest is completely different.
Yeah, I love that, because most of us really don't think about winding down and preparing for sleep. We just go to bed.
Right. You know? And when I was studying for my boards, I was not doing that because I would study every second till my eyes were closing, and then I'd just throw my book on the side of the bed and go to sleep. And it was not good for me. The payoff was not good. Yeah.
I've had this almost similar experience to that, because I have another certification course that I'm working on as well, and so it is on the computer, so I am listening to audios and videos, and a lot of times, I've really shifted this. I was doing this after dinner, between dinner and bedtime, and so I found that, wow, my symptoms started to skyrocket. They were getting really, really intense, these hormonal
mm-hmm.
symptoms, and my
mm-hmm.
sleep and the night sweats, because I wasn't winding down. I was like
mm-hmm.
revving up and learning,
mm-hmm.
and the blue light
mm-hmm.
from my computer
right.
and phone was really, I never realized how much of an impact that was having on me. And so I stopped.
Right. I had the same realization, and I even dim my lights. I dim the lights in the bathroom and in the bedroom, and if I can, I just light candles, especially when it's dark in the wintertime, just to really let my nerves settle. And I put my phone and my iPad down on a docking station in the office and close the door, and that really helps me completely cut myself off from the technology so I can
mm-hmm.
really welcome the restful night.
Yeah, and I think just being in 2015 with the iPads and the iPhones and the this and the that, like, it's like we actually have to be like, wow, like when I noticed how much it was affecting me, I had to really, you know, tune in and say, hey, this isn't working for me. And now that I have made a decision to shut down all technology from, you know, 5:30 on, you know, I have dinner around 6, like I'm done. And
yeah.
it's really made a big difference in my hormonal symptoms. And I couldn't believe how much of a shift occurred just from that one change.
Yeah, it is amazing. It's simple. It's so simple that it seems like it couldn't work.
I know. Yeah.
Is it really that simple? It could be.
Yeah. And then, you know, another shift that I thought was that was really critical, important for me, Beth, was the earlier and lighter dinners.
Right.
You
yeah.
know?
Just giving our body a time to burn through that nourishment we put in and get the big part of the digestion process going before we go to sleep. Yeah, that's really important. You know, something I've found doing those habits is at 6 o'clock, after 6 p.m., I think my stomach turns off because I'm not hungry. It's like, no, you missed it. You missed dinner, so, there's just, I'm not going to be able to digest anything more than maybe a cup of miso soup.
Yeah, you know, and I used to do dinner much later, you know, 7:30. Some of my ladies will even say later because they're very social. And not only are those meals late, but they're usually the biggest meal because we're Americans. And they're more difficult to digest because most of us are eating, you know, meat. And I'm a meat eater, you know. However, I've really shifted to thinking, wow, I need some things that are more soups and salads and, you know, lighter proteins to digest. And I try and keep my meat eating, if I have it, at lunch when my digestive fire is the highest.
Mm-hmm. Right, and really tuning into that, you can really feel the difference. I can in my body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like having, you know, last night I didn't do such a great job with the earlier, lighter dinner, I'll be honest. And I have to say, I didn't feel like I had completely digested all my food before I went to bed. And thus, you know, my sleep could have been better. But one of the things I really noticed, Beth, was I was tired this morning. My energy was really zapped.
And that is our gauge, is how do we feel in the morning? Has our body really completely rested? There was a call, and I can't remember what program it was with, but there were some women on the phone, and they were talking. This one woman was talking about how she had started eating earlier, lighter dinners, and some friends came from out of town, and she went out with them and just had a salad. And when she came to the program, she was having horrible hot flushes, and she had not realized that the hot flushes had gone away until she went out and had this small dinner salad with her friends while they had their big dinners. And it was, you know, after 7, and that night she had hot flushes.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the things that I noticed for myself, too, is some of my personal triggers food-wise were things that were very heating. You know, like hot and spicy foods, you know, caffeine, you know, the little dark chocolate square that I used to have with dinner, you know.
Yeah, and you live in a colder climate, right? So it's kind of... it's natural for you to be drawn to those types of foods to help keep your body warm.
You know, and I happen to be what in Ayurveda calls pitta, pitta vata. And you know more about that than I do, but I'm aware of I tend to be a little bit more fiery. I burn through my energy pretty quickly. And so this was that kind of like increasing like.
You know? It just turns into a death spiral.
And so that heating was not really what I was needing. So.
Right.
You
and
know,
it's
and
funny,
that's
when
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to talk about my food stuff.
Yeah. Well, when we get into these stressful situations, we are sort of drawn towards this death spiral sort of behavior. And it's very interesting to me to watch it happen, even with myself. Like when we're getting close to our period and we know that we shouldn't be eating inflammatory-type foods, grains and sweets and things like that, drinking alcohol, that's all we want.
Yeah, like everybody always talks about the cravings during that time period.
Right,
and those are very inflammatory foods.
Yeah, and so how can we find the discipline to be bigger than the cravings and really hold our own hands and say, look, you know what's going to happen. Is this really a decision that you want to make?
Right. So there needs to be some more presence and awareness around that time period.
Right.
And knowing that it's approaching and coming up and we're going to be more likely drawn to those type of foods. And so in having that awareness, I think, is step one.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, some of the things that I teach around kind of the cravings piece is that when it comes to food, we want that rhythm. So we want to be eating, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner and not skipping meals. And our bodies really like to know kind of generally when we're going to be fed because that reduces the overall stress on our body. It knows we're going to get breakfast, we're going to get lunch, and we're going to get dinner versus, you know, I usually eat lunch at noon, and the next thing you know, I'm working like a mad woman, and I skip lunch, and then it ends up being 2:30, and then I'm frazzled, I'm exhausted, I'm hungry, and I crave the closest thing that's going to make my blood sugar black up. And what is that? Sugar.
Sugar.
You know, breads and all that.
And as you're talking, Tanya, can you feel in the body how this would just foster more anxiety?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
Yeah, I can too.
Yeah. So there's that nourishment of mind and body and having, you know, a nice daily routine and having rhythm is really important.
Yeah, one of the hardest things that I've found with the 10 habits is giving up the snacking. And I can see how it goes along with the general anxiety of, like, I've got to eat something now because who knows if there's going to be something at lunchtime. And if we can truly nurture ourselves like we would our own children and give them consistent meals throughout the day and make sure that they're being fed like a good Jewish mother, we're not going to have that anxiety about eating whatever we can when we can. And it might even help those cravings.
Yeah, I really agree. And one of my main goals in my work is to help my women become more relaxed eaters and be more relaxed around eating. And as we've discussed, part of that is having a nice daily routine and rhythm around our meals.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you spoke about, you know, when we were talking about the word stress and how mm-hmm. it can also be around our perception, a lot of times we as women will really beat ourselves up over the craving for the candy bar or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And how we may not be aware of it, but that kind of negative self-talk can also be challenging on our nervous system.
Absolutely. There's a really good book by a woman named Kristen Neff, and it's called Self-Compassion.
Can you spell her last name?
N-E-F-F.
Okay.
And it was difficult to find when I looked for it about 2 years ago. I haven't looked for it lately. I had to special order it from Barnes & Noble because they couldn't even get it. I couldn't even get it on Amazon. But that book is full of so many wonderful tips and stories and ways to be soft with yourself.
Great. Yeah, I'll get that information from you so I can post it along with this audio recording. That would
okay.
be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what we've been talking about today, Beth, is the whole, what did I call it, perimenopausal insanity, and really the general kind of focus has been around that stress has been considered the number one contributor to perimenopausal angst, according to a bunch of consulted experts. And that's because stress changes the body's biochemistry and it aggravates hormonal imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think a great way to wrap up the call is to go ahead and just repeat Dr. Claudia Welch's quote, and that, again, is, there is no herb, supplement, or drug that can entirely take the place of having an appropriate diet, lifestyle, and stress management routine. Yeah. So,
amen.
Amen, Dr. Beth. Well, thank you so much for joining me today on this conversation. I hope all the ladies out there really found this conversation helpful. And ladies, if you have questions for either of us, we would certainly love to hear them and keep the conversation going around that. And if you want to learn a little bit more about us, I'm at TanyaMark.com. I also did a 3-part video called Women, Hormones, and Belly Fat that you can access on my site by clicking on the YouTube link. And Dr. Beth Claxton, her future site is selfcaremd.com. Is that correct?
Yes, coming soon.
Coming soon. So be patient, and that site will be coming up here in the future. But again, thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Beth, and we look forward to maybe having future conversations with you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Tanya. Thank you. This is great fun.
Yeah, great fun. Well, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.